Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. Have you found yourself doing more reading as the pandemic has eliminated other avenues of entertainment? Are you planning to read more with winter waiting in the wings? Do you have a favorite that you like to reread sometimes? Right now, we welcome John Andrews, managing editor of South Dakota Magazine, in the latest November-December issue. Andrews writes about 10 books to pass the time and grow your appreciation of South Dakota. That article is called Books to Read Again and Again. John Andrews, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here today.
Hi, Jackie. Good to talk to you.
So I want to start off with a very interesting point you make very early in this article. It's not just that we have a feeling that people are reading more. Those of us who are bookworms can sense ourselves reading more. There's some numbers to back this up. Tell us a little bit what you found.
Well, so, you know, going back to the very beginning on this, you know, as is happening with every other thing that we're doing these days, it's the pandemic is sort of dictating what we do and how we do it and whether we go places or don't go places. And so, you know, back in late spring and in early summer, we sort of started looking around to see what other magazines around the country were doing to sort of deal with what was happening and, you know, stories they were choosing to write about. And I came across a few different publications that had, you know, sort of reading lists or things that, they're pointing people in the direction of really good books since, you know, we were all working from home and we were staying there as much as we could and not going out nearly as much. And so you have to have something to do within your four walls to occupy your time. And books can be a really good avenue for that. So I started looking around at various articles, and people were talking about how reading was sort of on the rise here as we were spending time at home. And I thought, well, that's probably happening in South Dakota too, right? So I started looking around to try to figure out, you know, who could answer my questions. And so I got a hold of the State Library Association, Daria Bossman, out there, and just posed that question to her. And she turned it loose on all the librarians in the state. They have, you know, they have sort of an email network or a listserv or something. And so my question went out, and I started getting responses from Clear Lake and Wall and all over the place around the state. And they are very good at keeping track of what's happening in their libraries. And in pretty much all cases, you know, people were checking out a lot more books. Of course, there were other materials that were going out too, DVDs and audiobooks, of course. And the big thing now is the South Dakota Titles to Go, where, you know, if you have an e-reader, you can check that out, and it deposits it onto your e-reader, and when you're done, it poof, it just vanishes again, sort of like a virtual library, you know. So yeah, we found out that that people were taking advantage of our libraries more than ever. And so I just sort of got to thinking, you know, if we were going to approach this in some way, you know, what sort of a reading list could we put together? And so I just started thinking about books that I've read in, you know, almost 20 years now of reading and writing about South Dakota. There's 13 here at the magazine and the rest in other places. But I started sort of assembling a list of books that I had read about South Dakota, keeping in mind our magazine's mission, of course, to write about South Dakota and celebrate life and culture here. And I just started thinking, you know, what are some of the books that I've read over the years that have really stuck with me, that are, you know, either exploring life in South Dakota, or if they're by South Dakota authors, if they do both. So it didn't take too long to come up with a list. The original list was a little longer than what made it into the magazine, of course, but we sort of had to whittle it down there eventually. And so we came up, I settled on 10. That's a nice, fun, round number, right? So we settled on that, and then came the really fun part of revisiting all these books and, you know, rereading either portions or, in some cases, even all of them. Just to sort of refresh myself with why I liked him so much in the first place. And so hopefully we conveyed that, you know, as well as we could in the story.
Right. And there are some books in this list that I'm familiar with. A couple of them I have on my bookshelf, and there are others that I hadn't heard of before, and I'll be going home and adding them to the Kindle I bought since the pandemic began to fuel my bookwormness. But tell us about maybe one or two of the books on this list. You talk about in this article not being much for rereading books, which I identify with, and tell us about maybe a couple on this list of 10 that you were surprised to find yourself kind of happily rereading the entire way through.
Well, yeah, I've always been a person who reads a book and then it goes onto the shelf and that's where it stays. You know, I've read it. Okay, that's fine. I'm done. I'm moving along. But, you know, I've sort of been going through this exercise. I've sort of been swayed over to the other side in that going back and rereading things. You know, I've always been told, my wife is a rereader, and she's always told me, you know, if you read things multiple, there's so much more stuff that you pick up that you didn't even realize was there the first time. You know, maybe you're older, you interpret things differently, you read it in a different state of mind or a different frame of mind that you read it in originally, and you see things differently. And so I always said, yeah, sure, I'll do that sometime. And I just never did it, of course, until this project came along. And I went back and reread, you know, either portions or, like I said, in some cases, all of some of these books. And I wanted to make it clear, of course, that it's not a top 10 in any way. It's just a collection of books that I really enjoyed. If it was a top 10, then Giants in the Earth would be number one, clearly. Hmm. That's probably a conversation for another day, though. yeah, if you want to get into the merits of ranking books, I don't want to do that. So, but no, there was just something about Giants in the Earth that appealed to me personally, probably because, you know, the story is of Norwegian immigrants who come across the prairie and establish their own little settlement along Spring Creek in what was southeastern Dakota Territory at the time. And I sort of, you know, originally really fell in love with it because, I mean, that was my family's experience as well. You know, my family was, they were Norwegian immigrants who had made the trip, as so many of them did, across the ocean and then for a time in Wisconsin. You hear this among all sorts of families. You know, there were stops in Wisconsin, there were stops in Minnesota until finally they came to Dakota and then they stopped here. And so my family made the journey about 10 years after the family in Rolvag's novel did. But, you know, I remember when I read it, I kept thinking to myself, you know, geez, I wonder if my great-grandparents, you know, experienced what these characters are experiencing. You know, did they, when they came across in their wagon through the chest-high grass, did they stop and pay attention to the sound that it made? And, you know, what was it like when they built their first house? How close was their neighbor, you know? And so for me, it was sort of Giants in the Earth was more, it appealed to me more on a personal level, I think. That said, you know, it's written really well as well. It's written in 1927, and it reads really well today, almost 100 years later, I think. Mm-hmm. The ending is, as I say in the article, it is heartbreaking. I don't want to give it away, and I won't. You'll have to read it for yourself if you haven't. If you have read it, read it again and see what your reaction is. It might be the same. But no, again, not a ranking, but if it were, that was probably at the top of my list. And so that was one that was really fun to go back and revisit. And another one that I had completely forgotten how good was Buffalo for the Broken Heart by Dan O'Brien. So that was a book that was actually a one-book South Dakota by the South Dakota Humanities Council many years ago. And I was fortunate enough to listen to Dan O'Brien speak about it at one of the book festivals many years ago. But it's the story of turning his cow ranch out in western South Dakota into a buffalo ranch, and the pitfalls that came with it, what his neighbors thought. But it's not only a story of changing his livelihood. It's also
we're talking with John Andrews, the managing editor of South Dakota Magazine. We're walking through his article, 10 Books to Read Again and Again, talking about how many people are using the pandemic as a chance to increase their reading and their experiences. He opens the article talking about it's not just a feeling that you have from your bookworm friends. We've seen South Dakota libraries are handing out or checking out much more books this year than in similar times years past. In this article, between May 1st and July 29th, the South Dakota titles to go for e-books checked out 106,000 total checkouts between the beginning of May and the end of July, and that's up quite a bit, more than 86,000 from the same time period in 2019. We lost John Andrews for a second there, but we've got him back. John, we were talking about Buffalo for the Broken Heart, how this was another one of the books that you found yourself rereading this year. Bring us back to where we left off.
Yeah, sorry. I think someone may have disagreed with my placing Giants in the Year at the top of the list there. They needed the conversation to end. We were just talking about books that I had really enjoyed going back and revisiting. And Buffalo for the Broken Heart by Dan O'Brien was one of them. So we all know about the Broken Heart Ranch and the Wild Idea Buffalo Company, which has been around now for close to 20 years. Just the way that he tells the story of changing his cattle ranch. You know, he was in the midst of, you know, we talk about the farm crisis of the 80s and all the tough times that farmers went through, and how raising cattle out in western South Dakota can be difficult. And you know, he had one of those moments where he was trying to figure out, you know, just exactly what he was going to do. And there's a scene in the opening pages of the book where out in ranch country, if you're sort of struggling with some decisions and you need some time for self-reflection, you sort of get in the truck and go for a drive down these lonely, dusty roads, and you sort of have time by yourself to think about what's going to happen. And he did exactly that, and he writes in the book about how he was on one of these gravel roads, and he sort of came over a hill. And there, standing right in the middle of the road, was this great big buffalo. And it was almost, at that moment where he had this realization that, maybe this was the future for his ranch. Maybe it wasn't cattle after all. He was going about it the wrong way. And of course, he's got a background in conservation, and returning his ranch to buffalo. You know, the way that buffalo had grazed the prairie for thousands of years until they were nearly hunted to extinction in the late 19th century. And so, you know, it wasn't just bringing a new livelihood for himself. It was sort of rehabilitating the land that he owned and being a better steward of the land by reintroducing buffalo to this patch of grass out there. And so, you know, the story is about that. It's also a really good portrait of the neighborhood. You know, there are really, really good vignettes about his neighbors, how they interact with each other out in this part of the world. There's also a really good history of his own ranch, the people who came before him, who tried cattle and failed, and tried cattle again and failed, and tried cattle again and failed. And he was, it sort of fed into this idea that maybe he was going down this same wrong path that had been tried for decades. But that was a really fun revisitation, both Giants in the Earth and Buffalo for the Broken Heart. We can do one more if you want.
Sure, I think we've got time for just that. One more from our list of 10, and you'll have to look at the magazine to find out the rest. How about that?
Okay, that sounds good. We'll talk about, real briefly, we'll talk about Lord Grizzly by Frederick Manfred, and yeah, we'll do that because I've heard from a reader since who had a fun anecdote about the story.
Great.
So Lord Grizzly, of course, is the story of Hugh Glass, the mountain man Hugh Glass, who was mauled by a grizzly bear by the Grand River, sort of by the Lemon, the Shade Hill Reservoir area. And after the attack happened, the company of men that he was with just sort of left him to die. They thought that old Hugh Glass was done, but Hugh Glass survived. And as we know, he crawled. This is the basis, or the big chunk of this book is the crawl back from the attack site back to Fort Kiowa along the Missouri River near present-day Chamberlain. It's about 200 miles over West River. And then his subsequent vengeance, you know, tracking down these guys who had left him there. So going back and rereading the book, it was a lot of fun as well. We heard from a reader in the meantime who was a student at the University of South Dakota over in Vermilion in the 1960s. And he shared with us that when he got there, Lord Grizzly was required reading for all of the freshman English students. And so they attended, he said they attended lectures in Slagle, Slagle Auditorium, he called it back then, on a weekly basis. And one day, Frederick Manfred delivered one of the lectures. And, you know, he remembers Manfred as being this this sort of big tall guy. I think he stood about 6'9", very tall for any period, but back in the 60s it would seem, you know, positively giant, I would guess. But but he said the thing that really stuck out to him after all these years is that when Manfred described his research in putting this together, he wanted to see what the crawl felt like. And so he said that Manfred told him that he drove up to south of Lemon, and then he affixed this splint onto one of his legs to immobilize it. And he crawled only about a mile or two across the prairie. And apparently that was enough. You know, he said that, he remembers it was, he said something like it was more than difficult. And so here we're talking about, you know, a guy in the 1960s crawling just 1 or 2 miles across. And here Hugh Glass in 1823 made it 200 miles across the prairie. So, but yeah, that was just a fun anecdote, looking back into, you know, sort of the mind of one of these writers and the steps we sometimes take to make sure that what we're writing is as authentic as we can make it.
Wow. In a time of challenge and struggle and overcoming obstacles, here's a list of 10 books to remind us that these stories are not so unique, perhaps, to South Dakota. And my guest has been John Andrews, managing editor with South Dakota Magazine. John, we're going to take a short break. We're going to keep you on the phone and then welcome wildlife photographer Dean Pearson to talk another couple stories in your latest issue just ahead. I'm Jackie Hendry. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio.